Trying to lose weight? It's time to try Hers. At forhers.com/foryou, you can access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss treatments tailored just for you. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com. Apply.
What's the most unhinged thing your ex did after you broke up? When people ask why I'm still single after all these years, I usually laugh it off with some self-deprecating joke. But the truth? The truth is that my last relationship ended so catastrophically that it could be its own case study in what the actual hell just happened. It started with a breakup that, at first, felt almost civil. After 3 years together, I told Vanessa I couldn't do it anymore. There wasn't one explosive reason, more like a slow accumulation of cracks. She'd become unpredictable, jealous over the smallest things, and had this growing obsession with controlling how I interacted with literally everyone, from my friends to my own sister. Still, when I finally ended it, she just stared at me for a long time and said, "Fine. If that's what you want, it should have ended there." But with Vanessa, fine was never fine. 2 days later, I woke up to a flood of texts from friends asking if I was okay. Confused, I opened social media to find that Vanessa had posted a black and white photo of her crying, captioned, "When you give someone everything, and they throw you away for someone younger," which was insane, because there was no someone younger. She'd invented a mistress out of thin air. That was the warm-up act. Within a week, she was DMing every mutual acquaintance we had, claiming she'd found proof I'd been cheating for over a year. Some people didn't believe her, but others did, especially because she went the extra mile and photoshopped fake screenshots of me on dating apps. One looked so real that even I double-checked my phone to make sure my account hadn't been hacked. The part that really burned? She sent one of those fakes to my boss. I got called into HR for an informal conversation about conduct outside of work. Thankfully, they realized quickly that it wasn't real, but the humiliation was there. Every time I walked into the office, I wondered who had seen it and quietly judged me. When that didn't get the reaction she wanted, she escalated. I started getting mysterious deliveries. 10 pizzas to my apartment that I hadn't ordered, a bouquet of sympathy flowers addressed to the betrayed lover, and once, a massive box of adult toys I definitely hadn't purchased. The delivery driver smirked the whole time he dropped it off. Then came the phone calls, at all hours. Sometimes silent, sometimes with her playing songs we used to listen to, sometimes just her breathing heavily into the line before hanging up. I changed my number. She got the new one within 48 hours. The most surreal moment happened about a month after the breakup. I came home to find her sitting on the stairs outside my apartment building, holding a shoebox. She looked calm, almost serene, which was somehow worse than if she'd been screaming. "I thought you should have these," she said, handing me the box. Inside, a shredded pile of old love letters I'd written her, mixed in with Polaroids of us cut in half so that only I was visible. No explanation. She just stood up and walked away. Friends kept telling me to get a restraining order, but part of me still thought she'd eventually get tired and move on. I underestimated just how far she was willing to go, because the next thing she did, the thing that truly crossed into unhinged territory, made me realize I wasn't just dealing with a bitter ex. I was dealing with someone who was ready to burn the whole world down if it meant I'd notice. And that's when the police got involved. The night it all tipped over started like any other. I was watching TV, finally feeling like maybe she'd moved on, because I hadn't heard from Vanessa in a week. I even joked to my friend Mark on the phone that I could see the light at the end of the tunnel. That light turned out to be the flashing red and blue of a police cruiser. Around 10:30 p.m., there was a loud knock at my door. When I opened it, two uniformed officers were standing there, hands resting near their belts, faces serious. One asked, "Are you John Miller?" I nodded, instantly nervous. They told me they'd received a 911 call from a woman who claimed she was locked inside my apartment against her will. My stomach dropped. I live alone. They insisted on coming in to make sure no one was in danger. I let them in, still stunned, and watched as they swept through my apartment. Obviously, they found nothing, but the way they exchanged glances made it clear they weren't sure if they were walking into a domestic dispute or some bizarre prank. It didn't take me long to figure out who'd made the call. The officers eventually admitted they had the number from the 911 report, but they couldn't tell me more unless I filed a report myself. When I pressed them, one said carefully, "If this is a harassment situation, you might want to document everything. This call could have gone very differently for you." That night, I barely slept. I kept imagining what would have happened if they'd believed her right away. If I'd been cuffed, if my neighbors had seen it, if my employer got wind of it. The next day, I contacted a lawyer. He told me to start saving every message, screenshot, and delivery slip. We even discussed getting a restraining order, but he warned that in our state, without direct threats or physical stalking, it might be hard to get one approved. Vanessa must have sensed I was starting to fight back, because the harassment changed tactics. She began targeting the people around me instead. First was my sister, Emily. One morning, Emily called me in tears because someone had created a fake Instagram account using her photos and was sending explicit DMs to random men, some of whom were mutuals with Vanessa. The profile's bio? Keeping it in the family. Then it was Mark, my oldest friend. He got a handwritten letter at his office accusing him of helping me cover up crimes against women. It was signed Concerned Citizen, but in handwriting I recognized instantly. The worst was when my landlord called, saying he'd received an anonymous complaint that I was running an illegal business out of my apartment. I had to let an inspector come in just to prove I wasn't. The whole thing was humiliating. By now, I was paranoid. I started checking my locks twice a night, varying my commute to work, even looking over my shoulder when I walked home. It felt insane to think Vanessa could be watching, but some part of me couldn't shake it. And then she proved me right. One Saturday morning, I stepped outside to grab coffee and saw something taped to the windshield of my car. It was an envelope, my name scrawled across the front in that looping, almost childlike handwriting she had. Inside was a single photo, a picture of me sleeping. The angle was from outside my bedroom window. That was the moment I went from stressed to genuinely afraid. If she'd been close enough to take that photo, she'd been on my property, maybe even within feet of me while I was unconscious. I took it straight to the police. This time they listened. They opened a harassment and trespassing case, and the detective assigned told me to install cameras immediately. I did. Front door, back alley, even a motion sensor in the hallway. For about a week after that, there was silence. No calls, no deliveries, no fake accounts. I started hoping that maybe the police contact had scared her. But deep down, I knew Vanessa wasn't the type to back down. And sure enough, when she resurfaced, it wasn't with another creepy stunt. It was with something far bigger, far messier, and infinitely more dangerous. Because Vanessa had decided to take her story public, and she was going to make sure the whole internet saw it. I wish I could say I was surprised when I saw her face pop up on my phone screen that Monday morning, but I wasn't. What surprised me was how it happened. It wasn't a text or a call, it was a video that already had tens of thousands of views. Someone had sent me a TikTok link with the message, "Dude, is this about you?" I clicked. There she was, Vanessa, sitting in her bedroom with fake tears streaking her cheeks, talking straight into the camera. The video's title read, "Storytime: How I Escaped My Abusive Ex Who Everyone Thinks Is a Nice Guy." She didn't use my name, but she didn't have to. She described my job, my neighborhood, my car, even my favorite coffee shop. Anyone who knew us, anyone who'd ever followed her online, could piece it together in seconds. Then came the accusations. She claimed I'd emotionally tortured her, stalked her after she left, and threatened her life more than once. She even said she had screenshots and recordings, but couldn't share them yet for legal reasons. It was masterfully manipulative. She framed herself as a survivor, telling her truth to warn other women. And the comments, my God, the comments. "Sending you love, queen. He needs to be exposed. Name him. Don't let him get away with it." The video blew up. By the end of the day, it had over 500,000 views. Strangers started DMing me with threats, some promising to find me, others telling me I should end myself before they did it for me. I called my lawyer in a panic. He told me not to engage online and to keep documenting everything. But that's the thing about viral mobs. Once the narrative is set, the truth doesn't matter. 2 days later, she posted part two, this time holding a blurred out photo she claimed was proof of a bruise I'd given her. The problem? The picture was from 2 years earlier, and I knew for a fact she'd gotten that bruise falling off her bike. But in her story, it was the night she escaped my apartment. I reported the videos, but TikTok didn't remove them. "Doesn't violate our guidelines," they said. It started spilling into real life. I got heckled walking to my car, Someone slipped a note under my apartment door that said, "Abuser, my boss called me into his office again, this time looking genuinely uncomfortable. He told me multiple clients had expressed concern about being associated with me after seeing things online." And then came the protest. One Saturday morning, I looked out my window to see six people standing on the sidewalk with handmade signs that read, "Stop John Miller and Believe Survivors." I had no idea who they were. Friends of hers? Random strangers from the internet? They stood there for hours, taking turns live streaming. By the time they left, my building manager was knocking on my door saying, "This is becoming a liability for us." I couldn't take it any. I went to the detective handling my case and laid everything out. The videos, the harassment, the trespassing photo. He told me they were considering harassment and defamation charges, but warned it would be a slow process. Meanwhile, Vanessa wasn't slowing down. In fact, she was escalating again. And this time, she wasn't just painting me as an abuser. She was accusing me of crimes I could actually be arrested for. And she had evidence, the kind she manufactured herself.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
I thought I'd already seen the worst she could do. I was wrong. It started with a knock at my door just before midnight on a Thursday. I opened it to find two police officers standing there, one holding a manila folder. My stomach sank instantly. "Mr. Miller, we need to ask you some questions," one said. They told me someone had come forward with digital evidence that I'd been harassing and threatening them via email. They wouldn't say who, but I didn't need to guess. Vanessa's fingerprints were all over this. The officer opened the folder and pulled out a stack of printed emails. The first one had my full name and the sender's address, john.miller1989@provider.com, and it was vile, detailed threats, graphic language, promises of violence, and the date stamps, all from the past 2 weeks. My hands started shaking, not because I'd sent them, but because they looked real. I told the officers those weren't mine, that I'd never even had that email address. They said the recipient had screenshots from their inbox showing the messages arriving from that account. The recipient, of course, was Vanessa. I begged them to look deeper, to trace the IP addresses. One of the officers, thankfully, seemed skeptical and told me they'd need to verify before taking further action. But the other was clearly ready to treat me as guilty until proven innocent. After they left, I sat in my living room in the dark, staring at my phone. If she could fake something that convincing, what was next? Could she plant something on my devices? Could she claim I'd assaulted her and make it stick? The next morning, I called my lawyer. He was furious and immediately brought in a digital forensics expert. They analyzed the emails and confirmed they'd been spoofed, essentially faked to look like they came from me, but actually sent from an overseas server. The timestamps had even been altered. We brought that to the detective. He said it was enough to formally add criminal impersonation to her list of potential charges, but again, this was going to take time. Meanwhile, I still had to live with the fact that for several hours, there was a police file with my name on it and threats of violence attached. But Vanessa wasn't satisfied with just trying to get me arrested. A week later, I woke up to find my work email had been hacked. Every client I'd corresponded with in the past 6 months got an email claiming I'd been let go for misconduct and offering them a special discount if they switched to a new service. A link that redirected to a PayPal account under the name V. Lane. The IT department managed to shut it down quickly, but not before several clients called my boss directly, confused and concerned. My boss, to his credit, didn't believe the nonsense, but he made it clear that the company couldn't weather this kind of attention forever. I was losing everything, piece by piece. The police told me that if I caught her on camera near my property again, it would help push things forward. So I upgraded my security system. I added motion-activated spotlights and multiple high-definition cameras. I even got alerts sent straight to my phone. 3 nights later, I got one. At 2:13 a.m., the motion sensor in my driveway went off. When I pulled up the footage, my blood ran cold. It was Vanessa. Hood up, gloves on, holding something in her hand. She walked right up to my car and crouched near the gas tank. After about 30 seconds, she stood, looked straight into the camera, and smiled. A slow, deliberate smile, before walking away. When I checked my car in the morning, there was sugar in the gas tank. Thousands in repairs. That footage finally got her arrested, but only briefly. She posted bail within hours, And when she got out, she didn't hide. She made it clear, in the most public way possible, that she wasn't finished. Because the next thing she did wasn't just about ruining me. It was about making me afraid to exist. The first morning after she got out on bail, I stepped outside to head to work and froze. Taped to my apartment door was a sheet of paper with a single sentence written in thick black marker. You'll never feel safe again. No signature. No flourish. Just a promise. I ripped it down and shoved it in my bag, taking it straight to the detective. He sighed, that weary sigh cops give when they know something's wrong but can't quite prove enough to act, and told me to stay vigilant. From that day on, every corner of my life felt compromised. It started small. My favorite coffee shop, the one I went to every morning before work, suddenly felt watched. I'd be halfway through my latte and notice the same car idling outside for 20 minutes. Or I'd see someone in a hoodie sitting in the corner, never ordering, just scrolling on their phone and occasionally glancing up at me. One afternoon, I came home to find a package on my doorstep. No return address. Inside, a disposable phone with a single contact saved, me. I threw it straight in a drawer, figuring it was bait for something. But a few hours later, it started buzzing. Over and over. I didn't answer. Then my neighbors started asking questions. Someone had been knocking on their doors late at night asking, "Do you know the guy in 4B? You should know who you're living next to." Some neighbors admitted they didn't even open the door. They just heard the voice through the peephole. Others said it was a woman in a baseball cap, head down, always leaving quickly. The paranoia became exhausting. I switched up my grocery store. I stopped jogging my normal route. I even started taking different exits off the highway just to make sure no one was following me. But no matter how I changed my patterns, I'd still catch glimpses. A flash of her hair disappearing around a corner, a figure ducking into a shop as I walked past. One night, around 11 p.m., I was sitting on my couch when I heard the faintest scratching sound at my front door. Not knocking, scratching. Like someone slowly dragging metal along the wood. My heart was pounding so hard I could hear it in my ears. I grabbed my phone, hit record, and crept to the peephole. There she was, Vanessa, kneeling in front of my door, dragging a key, my old apartment key, across the paint, carving something. I yelled through the door for her to leave. She didn't flinch, didn't run. She just looked straight into the peephole, smirked, and walked away. When I opened the door, I saw what she'd carved. Three letters. Run. The detective said the footage was good evidence, but not enough for immediate jail time unless she violated a direct no-contact order. We were still in the process of securing one. But the incident changed something in me. I started sleeping with a baseball bat next to my bed. I left the TV on low all night, just so I'd hear if the volume changed. And then came the worst blow yet. My parents, who live in another state, called one Sunday morning, their voices tight with panic. Someone had mailed them a packet of evidence, claiming I was under investigation for violent crimes. The packet included printouts of Vanessa's videos, fake police reports, and what looked like mugshots of me, badly edited from a photo I'd taken at a wedding. The return address? None. But the postmark was from my city. That was when I realized she wasn't just targeting me anymore. She was trying to destroy me in the eyes of the only people whose opinion I still cared about. My parents said they believed me, but I could hear the tremor in my mom's voice. She was scared. Not of me, but of what this woman was capable of. And I knew, deep down, that Vanessa wasn't anywhere near finished. Because the next time she showed up in my life, she wouldn't be leaving notes or carving threats. She'd be standing in the middle of my workplace, in front of everyone I knew, ready to set off her biggest explosion yet. It was a Wednesday morning, mid-September. I remember because it was supposed to be a normal, quiet day. Just me, a stack of project reports, and a couple of back-to-back client calls. For the first time in weeks, I'd woken up without that crushing sense of dread in my chest. By 10:15 a.m., I was in the conference room, laptop open, running through a quarterly review with a client over Zoom. The blinds were half open, letting in that kind of soft fall light that makes you think maybe things are going to be okay. Then I heard the elevator doors slam open. Not just open, slam. Heavy, echoing footsteps followed, quick and purposeful. I barely registered it at first, until I saw my coworkers' heads turning toward the glass doors of our office. And then she was there, Vanessa. She walked in like she owned the place, hair wild, oversized hoodie hanging off one shoulder, clutching a thick manila folder under her arm. Her eyes found mine instantly through the conference room glass, and the corner of her mouth lifted into this horrible half-smile. "John Miller," she called out, loud enough for the entire floor to hear. "We need to talk. Now." The client on my Zoom call froze mid-sentence. My stomach dropped into my shoes. I stood up, hands raised slightly, trying to keep my voice level. "Vanessa, you can't be here. You need to leave. Oh, I'm not going anywhere, she shot back, striding toward the conference room. Not until everyone here knows exactly who they're working with. The office was dead silent. Even the phones seemed to stop ringing. She swung the folder onto the conference table and flipped it open with a dramatic flourish. Out spilled printed screenshots of her TikTok videos, fake email threats, the edited mugshots, and, to my horror, enlarged stills from the photo she'd taken of me sleeping. This man, she announced, pointing at me, is a danger to women. He harassed me for months after I escaped our abusive relationship. He's a stalker, a liar, and... That's enough, my manager Paul cut in sharply, stepping between us. You need to leave before we call security. Oh, call them, she sneered. I'll tell them, too. I've got evidence, and I'm happy to share it with every single one of your clients. I could feel every pair of eyes in the office on me. My heart was pounding so hard I could barely hear Paul speaking over the rush in my ears. My client was still on Zoom, watching the entire thing unfold. Security finally arrived. Two guards who looked like they'd been plucked straight from a sitcom. But Vanessa didn't go quietly. As they guided her toward the door, she yelled over her shoulder, "Ask him about the night I almost died. Ask him why the police keep coming to his apartment." The moment she was gone, the room seemed to exhale all at once. Paul told me to take the rest of the day off. I packed my things in silence, every muscle in my body trembling. When I got to my car in the garage, there was a note under the windshield wiper. Three words, written in her looping script, "This isn't over." The fallout from that day was brutal. HR called me in first thing the next morning for a formal conversation about the incident. They said they understood it was a personal matter, but they couldn't ignore the disruption it caused. Several coworkers avoided me entirely, while others gave me those cautious, sidelong glances like they weren't sure what to believe. Worse, two clients emailed my boss saying they needed reassurance before continuing to work with me. The damage to my reputation wasn't just personal anymore, it was professional. My lawyer sent her a cease and desist that same week, adding the office intrusion to the ongoing harassment case. The detective told me this would help, that it was yet another documented violation of boundaries. But deep down, I knew Vanessa wouldn't be scared off by paperwork. And I was right. Two nights later, my phone buzzed at 2:41 a.m. It was an unknown number, but the message made my skin crawl. If I can walk into your office, I can walk into your home. I didn't sleep after that. I just sat on my couch in the dark, staring at the front door, waiting for the knob to turn. From that moment on, my life wasn't just stressful. It felt like a countdown. I didn't know to what, but I knew Vanessa was building towards something bigger, something worse. And when it came, it wouldn't be in front of my coworkers or online. It would be somewhere she had complete control. Somewhere I couldn't just walk away. After the office incident, I avoided any place where she might predictably find me. I stopped going to my regular coffee shop, took different streets to work, and even started grocery shopping late at night in stores on the other side of town. I thought unpredictability would give me some sense of control. But Vanessa wasn't chasing me in random places anymore. She was planning. It started with an email, not from her, at least not directly, but from a law firm I didn't recognize. The subject line read, "URGENTLEGALNOTICE." My stomach twisted as I opened it. The email claimed I was required to attend a mediation meeting regarding a matter of mutual concern between myself and a private party. It said attendance was mandatory and failure to show could negatively affect my standing in ongoing legal proceedings. At first, I thought it might be something my lawyer had arranged without telling me, so I forwarded it to him. He replied quickly, "Not from me. Don't go." But then I saw the address, a shared co-working space downtown. Not a courthouse, not a legal office. Something about it gnawed at me. Against my better judgment, curiosity and paranoia worked together to convince me that if I didn't show up, she'd spin it into another narrative about me running from accountability. So I went. The co-working space was almost empty when I arrived, except for one receptionist who didn't even look up as I walked in. I told her the room number from the email, and she waved me down a hall. When I opened the door, my blood ran cold. Vanessa was sitting at the far end of a small conference table, hands folded, a phone on a tripod aimed directly at the chair opposite her. "Well," she said, her smile sharp, "you came." I froze in the doorway. "This isn't mediation. I'm leaving." "You could," she said lightly. "But then I'd just tell everyone you refuse to face me. This is your chance to explain yourself. On record," she tapped the phone. "For transparency," I turned to walk out. But before I could, she spoke again, her voice dropping low. "If you leave, I'll post what I have. All of it. And it won't matter that it's fake. You know it'll stick." Against every instinct, I sat down. For the next 30 minutes, She went on a performance worthy of a courtroom drama, accusing me of everything from stealing from her to endangering her life. She slid evidence across the table, doctored bank statements, printed text threads where my number appeared next to threats I'd never sent, even a fake police incident report. Every time I called out a lie, she'd tilt her head and smile like she knew something I didn't. The whole thing wasn't for me. It was for the camera. She wanted to capture me reacting, getting defensive, looking guilty in whatever chopped-up version she planned to upload later. Finally, I stood. We're done here. That's when she pulled the final card. From her bag, she took out a single photo. It was blurry, grainy, but it looked like me, standing outside her apartment building at night. "I can make this look like stalking," she said softly. "Imagine what the internet will do with that." I didn't take the bait. I walked out without another word, my heart pounding so hard I could barely hear my own footsteps. 2 days later, the video appeared online anyway, cut, edited, and framed to make me look like a man caught confessing under pressure. She'd spliced my words together to form sentences I'd never actually said. The caption read, "Finally, he admits it." The comments section was pure chaos. Half the people believed her. The other half thought it was obviously staged, but that didn't matter. The damage was in the doubt. That night, my lawyer told me this had crossed into criminal defamation territory, and that we had enough to push harder for charges. But he also warned me, the more cornered she feels, the more dangerous she's going to get. He was right, because the next time she appeared in my life, it wasn't behind a camera, or through a screen, or in front of my coworkers. It was in a place she knew I couldn't walk away from, and this time, she had something, or someone, with her. By this point, every knock at the door, every unknown number, every flicker of movement outside my window felt like a threat. But I still had to live some version of a normal life, which meant I still went to work, still went to the grocery store, still tried to exist outside the walls of my apartment. Vanessa knew this, and she knew exactly where to strike next. It was a Saturday afternoon, the kind of day when I'd usually run errands and try to clear my head. My guard was a little lower. I wasn't expecting her in broad daylight in the middle of a public space. I was halfway through my shopping at a big box store when I heard a voice behind me that made my blood turn to ice. "Well, look who it is." I turned, and there she was. Vanessa. But she wasn't alone. Standing next to her was a guy I didn't recognize. Tall, broad, with a shaved head and a posture that screamed confrontation. He had one hand resting on the handle of the shopping cart, the other tucked in his hoodie pocket. Vanessa was grinning like this was the most casual, pleasant run-in in the world. "John," she said, loud enough for nearby shoppers to hear. "I was just telling my friend here about you." She leaned slightly toward him. "This is the one I told you about." The guy's eyes locked onto mine, cold and steady. "Yeah," he said. "I've heard a lot." I glanced around. We were in the middle of the home goods aisle, people milling past, oblivious. "Leave me alone," I said, keeping my voice even. Vanessa tilted her head, mock offended. "What? We're just talking. Unless you've got something to hide?" She pulled her phone from her pocket, screen already recording. I knew the game. She wanted me to snap, to look aggressive on camera. I started to push my cart past them, but the guy stepped into my path. "She says you've been harassing her," he said, "following her, sending threats." "That's not true," I said firmly. "And you both need to move." Vanessa chuckled, this low, ugly sound. "It's not harassment when it's the truth, John." Then she raised her voice, projecting for the benefit of anyone within earshot. "You think you can get away with what you did to me?" A woman pushing a stroller glanced our way. A store employee slowed down, looking uncertain. I could feel the attention shifting toward us, the tension building. I took a step back, not because I was afraid of him, though I was, but because I could see how quickly this could escalate into something I couldn't undo. "I'm leaving," I said. Vanessa smirked. "Go ahead. I've got this all on video. Everyone's gonna see how you just happened to show up wherever I am." I pushed past, my hands gripping the cart so hard my knuckles hurt. I didn't look back, but I could hear her laughing behind me. That laugh stayed with me the entire drive home. When I pulled into my parking lot, I noticed a car I didn't recognize parked across the street. Black sedan, tinted windows. I sat in my car for a moment, watching. After a few minutes, it drove off. Paranoia told me it was them. That night, the first text came in from an unknown number. "Nice shopping trip today. You looked nervous." Then another. "You should be nervous." I forwarded the messages to my lawyer and the detective. The detective told me this was enough to file for a no-contact order, especially with the store cameras likely catching the interaction. But he also warned me it might take weeks for the court to process it. Those weeks were hell. I started seeing the black sedan more often, once parked outside my gym, another time idling near the corner of my block. Every time, it would drive off as soon as I noticed. Packages started showing up at my door again. One contained a brick wrapped in duct tape, another, a dead bouquet of flowers with a note that read, "For the funeral." The worst came one night just after midnight. I was lying in bed scrolling mindlessly on my phone when my apartment buzzer went off. My stomach dropped. I froze, waiting to see if it was just a drunk neighbor. But then it buzzed again, and again, relentless. Finally, I grabbed my phone and opened the building's security app. The camera feed showed Vanessa standing at the front door, her friend from the store beside her. She was holding a large envelope, waving it toward the camera like she was offering a gift. I didn't move. I didn't speak. After a few minutes, they left. In the morning, the envelope was still there. Inside were a stack of printed screenshots. All fakes, all showing me supposedly sending violent threats. Each page was labeled, "Copy for the court." That was the day I realized Vanessa had no intention of stopping until she either got me arrested or destroyed me completely. And she was getting closer to succeeding. Because 2 days later, I got a call from the detective. "John," he said, his voice tight, "I need you to come down to the station. Now, we have a situation." Whatever hope I'd been holding on to, that the truth would eventually win, started to slip through my fingers. Because if Vanessa had finally convinced the police to pull me in, it meant she'd crossed another line, one that might be impossible to come back from. The call from the detective didn't sound like a request. It sounded like a summons. I barely had time to grab my jacket before heading to the station, my mind cycling through every possible scenario. Had Vanessa filed some new complaint? Had she gotten someone else to lie for her? Or had she finally managed to fake something convincing enough to get me booked? When I arrived, the detective, Ramirez, was waiting in the lobby. His usual calm demeanor was replaced with something sharper. Not quite anger, but definitely urgency. He motioned for me to follow him into a small interview room, the kind with a table bolted to the floor and a camera in the corner. "John," he began, leaning forward, "I need you to listen carefully before you react. This morning, we received an anonymous drop-off at the front desk. It was a USB drive, along with a handwritten note claiming it contained proof you've been planning an attack on Vanessa." I felt the blood drain from my face. "Planning an attack? That's insane." "I know," Ramirez said quickly. "But I have to tell you, the files on that drive are bad. Really bad." He slid a folder across the table. Inside were printed screenshots of what looked like a private chat log, my name and photo at the top, filled with violent threats, detailed plans for getting even mentions of specific dates and places. There was also an audio file supposedly of me speaking, saying things I'd never said in my life. "They used voice cloning," Ramirez explained. "We'll get it analyzed, but the problem is, to anyone who doesn't know how easy this tech is to fake, it looks real." The note that came with the USB was short and chilling. "This is your last chance to stop him before he hurts someone." No signature, but the handwriting was unmistakable. Vanessa's looping, deliberate script. My lawyer arrived within the hour, his face tight with controlled fury. "This is manufactured," he told Ramirez. "You know it, I know it. But the problem is the optics. If this gets into the wrong hands before we disprove it, my client's life is over." Ramirez nodded grimly. "We're not arresting you. Not yet. But I need you to understand how close this came. Another officer might not have given you the benefit of the doubt." That "not yet" lodged itself in my chest like a splinter. I left the station feeling like I was walking on a tightrope over a drop I couldn't survive. Every step felt like it could be the one that sent me falling. Over the next few days, the pressure mounted. Vanessa posted another video, this time claiming she was working with the authorities to bring a dangerous man to justice. She didn't show the fake evidence, but she didn't have to. The implication was enough. People started commenting things like, "He's going down soon, and finally she'll be safe." Then came the tale. I first noticed him outside my apartment, a man in plain clothes, pretending to scroll through his phone but always within sight. The next day, he was parked across from my office. Whether he was police or someone Vanessa had hired, I didn't know. All I knew was that my every move was being watched. It all came to a head one Thursday night. I just left my office when Ramirez called. "John, I need you to go somewhere public. Right now. Do not go home." My heart started racing. "Why? What's happening?" "There's chatter," he said carefully. "Someone reported seeing you lurking outside Vanessa's building tonight. I know it's not true. I just saw you leave work on the street cams. But others don't know that. I'm trying to get ahead of it." I ducked into a crowded cafe, my hands shaking so hard I nearly dropped my phone. From my seat by the window, I could see the black sedan again, idling across the street. That's when I realized the truth. Vanessa wasn't just trying to ruin my reputation anymore. She was trying to set up a situation where the police would have no choice but to arrest me. And with the fake voice recordings, the forged chat logs, and her growing online following, she was getting dangerously close to pulling it off. The next morning, my lawyer filed for an emergency hearing to address the no-contact order and present all the evidence of her harassment. It was scheduled for the following week. I thought I just had to hold out until then. But Vanessa wasn't going to wait. Because 3 days before that hearing, she made her boldest move yet, one that brought everything crashing down in front of more witnesses than I could have ever imagined. And this time, there would be video from half a dozen different angles. 3 days before the hearing, I was doing everything I could to keep my head down. I'd arranged my work schedule so I could come and go during off hours. I'd cut off social media entirely. And I barely spoke to anyone who wasn't my lawyer or my parents. I thought maybe, just maybe, if I kept quiet, Vanessa would have nothing new to use against me before court. I underestimated her. It was a Sunday afternoon. The air was crisp, the kind of late autumn day when the sun feels thin but the sky is bright. I decided to walk to a bookstore downtown. It was only a few blocks from my apartment, and I needed to feel like a normal person again, if only for an hour. I had just reached the edge of the main square when I saw the crowd. At first, I thought it was some kind of street performance. A cluster of people gathered in front of the fountain, phones held high. But then I heard her voice, Vanessa. She was standing on the low edge of the fountain, holding a microphone connected to a small portable speaker. In front of her was a tall man with a DSLR camera filming everything. Beside him, a woman held up a large sign with my full name printed in black block letters. And then I saw it, a blown-up photo of me, the same grainy image she'd shown me during that fake mediation. The one she claimed proved I was outside her apartment at night. This, she shouted into the mic, her voice echoing across the square, is the man who has stalked me for months. This is the man the police refused to stop, and I'm here today to warn every single one of you. Because if the system won't protect women, we have to protect each other. I froze. People were already turning their heads toward me. She'd spotted me and was pointing right at where I stood. That's him, she yelled, right there. Look at him pretending to be innocent. The crowd shifted. Some people moved closer, phones raised. Others just stared. I could feel my chest tightening, heat rising up the back of my neck. Sir, is this true? A woman in the crowd called out. Are you following her right now? I opened my mouth to speak, but Vanessa jumped in before I could. Of course he's here. He can't stand the idea of me speaking my truth without trying to intimidate me. This is exactly what he does. He shows up, he stares, he scares. Her cameraman had already turned the lens on me, and I knew what was happening. No matter what I said, no matter how I looked, it would be edited later to fit her story. Leave me alone, I said loudly, trying to keep my voice steady. You know this isn't true, Vanessa. You've been harassing me for months. She let out this mocking laugh. Oh, the poor abuser is the real victim now, huh? That's the oldest trick in the book, someone in the crowd muttered. Yeah, I've heard that before. And another person said, we should call the cops. That's when she pulled out her prop, the manila folder. She opened it and began waving sheets of paper at the audience. Here's proof. Printed messages, emails, photos, all from him. From where I stood, I could see the same forged threats, the doctored screenshots, the fake police reports. This is harassment, I shouted back. Every single thing you're holding is fabricated. Liar, she screamed. And then, as if on cue, the black sedan pulled up along the curb, the same one I'd been seeing for weeks. The passenger door opened, and out stepped her friend from the store, the tall, broad guy with the shaved head. He walked right up behind me, close enough that I could feel the heat coming off him. You should leave, he said quietly, low enough that only I could hear. You're outnumbered here. Vanessa saw him and turned her voice to the crowd again. Even now he's got backup here to intimidate me. Do you all see this? Do you see what I've been living with? The square had turned into a stage, and I was trapped in the middle of it. Every instinct told me to walk away, but I knew what that would look like in her edit. The guilty man fleeing the scene. I looked around for an ally, a witness, anyone who might recognize this for what it was. That's when I spotted a uniformed police officer making his way across the square. For a brief second, relief washed over me. Surely this would end it. But then Vanessa turned to him and shouted, Officer, this is the man I filed complaints about. He's here right now, violating the order. There was no order yet. We were days away from the hearing. But she said it like it was a fact. The officer paused, scanning between us, clearly unsure. Sir, he said to me, I'm going to need you to step over here with me for a moment. And that's when it hit me. This was the moment she'd been building toward. The audience, the cameras, the props, the sudden arrival of law enforcement. All of it was designed to make me look like I was caught red-handed. I had seconds to decide whether to stay and argue or walk into whatever trap she'd set for me next. And the decision I made in that moment, well, that's when things truly exploded. The officer's request hung in the air like a threat. Every eye in the square was on me. Vanessa was watching with that calculated expression, half fury, half anticipation, like she was already picturing the thumbnail for her next viral video. I forced myself to move slowly, deliberately, as I walked toward the officer. My lawyer's voice echoed in my head. Don't run. Don't raise your voice. Don't give them anything they can use. The officer guided me a few steps away from the crowd. We've had reports, he began cautiously, that you've been harassing this woman. I know what she told you, I said evenly. I have a harassment case open against her. Everything she's saying is fabricated. I can prove it. I have documentation, police reports, and security footage. Behind him, I could see Vanessa still performing for the crowd, holding up her fake evidence, like a prosecutor delivering a closing argument. People were nodding, murmuring, phones still recording. Look, I said, lowering my voice. I'm not here to cause trouble. I was just walking to the bookstore when I saw this. She spotted me first and turned it into a spectacle. The officer studied me for a moment, then glanced toward Vanessa. I'm going to need you to stay here while I talk to her, he said. He left me standing there, the tall, shaved head guy still hovering nearby, his arms folded, eyes locked on me. Every time I shifted my weight, he took a small step closer, crowding my space without quite touching me. Then I heard it. Vanessa's voice rising again, this time pitched high with fake desperation. Officer, he's dangerous. He's violated the order before. He's here now. You have to take him in. My heart was pounding.
Lowe's knows that free makes everything better. That's why our rewards members get free standard shipping on the things they need and want, starting at Silver Key status every day. Savings for rewards members add up fast, so why wait? Join for free today. Lowe's. We help. You save. Not available in Alaska and Hawaii. Exclusions and more terms apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/shipping terms. Subject to change.
There was no order yet, and she knew it. But the people around us didn't. I could feel their judgment like heat on my skin. The officer came back. Sir, I'm not detaining you, he said carefully. But I strongly suggest you leave the area immediately. For everyone's safety. And that was the moment Vanessa pounced. See? He's being escorted away because he's guilty, she shouted, loud enough for the whole square. The crowd erupted. Some booed, others yelled things I won't repeat. I wanted to fight back, to shout the truth at them, but I knew it would be pointless. Instead, I turned and walked away, every step feeling heavier than the last. Phones tracked me as I left, capturing the exact image Vanessa wanted, me retreating while she stood triumphant in front of the fountain. I didn't look back, but I could still hear her voice carrying over the square. We protect women. We believe survivors. We don't let monsters walk free. By the time I got home, clips from the scene were already circulating online. Some accounts had edited it to make it look like I'd been physically removed by police. Others were tagging my name alongside words like predator and stalker. My phone was buzzing nonstop with messages from unknown numbers. Threats, insults, demands that I confess. I sent the raw footage from the bookstore's street cameras to my lawyer. They showed me walking into the square after she was already there, clearly not approaching her until she pointed me out. We also had clear audio from bystanders' phones capturing her shouting about an order that didn't exist. 3 days later, in court, my lawyer presented everything. The forged documents, the fake emails, the doctored audio, and now the footage from the square. The judge's expression hardened more with every new piece of evidence. When it was Vanessa's turn to speak, she started with her usual fire. But it fizzled fast under questioning. The inconsistencies piled up, and when my lawyer played the uncut recordings, her confidence cracked. For the first time in months, I saw something in her eyes that looked like fear. By the end of the hearing, the judge granted a full restraining order against her, immediate and enforceable. The criminal investigation into her harassment and falsified evidence was officially opened. It didn't undo the damage to my reputation. It didn't erase the months of stress, fear, and humiliation. But it was the first real win I'd had since this nightmare began. As I left the courthouse, I caught a glimpse of her on the sidewalk, flanked by her cameraman and the shaved head guy. She didn't shout. She didn't even look at me. She just watched me walk away. And for the first time, she was the one who didn't follow.